Okay, Sunday night, here we go. Day 42, seven left. What are we going to do with ourselves? Okay, so we'll start off today. Excuse me, I've got a little bit of a stomach flu. And so I'll probably be coughing a bit. Sorry about that. So we're going to start off with the breath. And we're going to go back to what we were doing with the egg. So just fill your egg. And try and find new spaces every time. And as you exhale, just let it all settle into your belly. And allow that settling to become the yolk, that feeling of golden light. Then inhale again, using a bit of the tortoise breath contraction. And then as that becomes really a solid sense of the yolk, as you exhale, excuse me, this is a bit tricky. It's not that you want to push it into your spine, it's that you want to allow it to enter your spine. So, yeah, it's just really important not to be pushy. So, again, we inhale, deep breath, fill the egg, find lots of new spaces, like that fifth rib by your shoulder blade. Exhale, let that sense of the yolk form and settle. Inhale again. Let that sense of the yolk build and fill that space and volume. And then as you exhale, just allow it to enter into the sacrum and spine. And with a sense of curiosity, see if you can feel where that sense of light may or may not want to move. It may want to just fill into your back in general. It may want to go up the back of your spine, the middle of your spine, the front of your spine, the sides of your spine. So there's a lot of ways that that feeling can go. And the best advice I've ever had is just to be curious with your attention as you navigate around your back and spine, to just feel where things are. The more people, in my experience, try and push it or force it, the more they typically end up getting headaches, and or some people just actually go crazy. So let's not do that. Crazy is kind of boring. So let's go back to that again. So just inhale. As you exhale, let the yolk feeling coalesce. It might be a little big, a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger, it doesn't matter. As we inhale again, I'm going to use a little bit of that tortoise breathing to really contain it. And then as we exhale, we're going to use that tortoise breathing again to just allow it to just sort of melt into the spine and see where it goes. It's still a good idea to use your spine as a bit of a whip to come up into your eyes in very slow motion. and we'll come back to that. But I just want to make sure that we're really paying some very intimate attention to what's happening right in front of your sacrum. And keep breathing that way. And I'm going to share a couple of things today. Do whatever breathing comes to mind. And since it's Sunday, if there's anything you'd like to ask or share or bring up in any way, please do. Because I'm just going to share two or three little bits that hopefully will give us some perspective on this whole process. So there's a teaching on stalking. Now, stalking has a bit of a bad rep when you think about it in one sense. But when you think about it in the sense of living in the natural world, in the sense of trying to stalk your prey, that's obviously another way we mean that. And in the indigenous traditions of working with a mentor, an elder, a medicine person, there's an underlying agreement that the medicine person is stalking you in the sense of your true self. And the understanding is they're somewhat closer to their true self, whatever that might mean. So as they're stalking you as a true self, towards you, your true self, this, there's actually a process. And I'm going to share that with you in the context of meditation because I think it's the easiest way to see it. So like a lot of teachings that come from that tradition, there's going to be four parts to it, like a compass. And in this tradition, or in that teaching on stalking, The first thing that we would naturally do if we're stalking the experience of meditation is to actually just sort of watch someone do it. Kind of like kids, you know, they kind of watch what people are doing. And as they get a bit older, they kind of play house or play doctor, or I guess play medicine man or medicine woman. And that initial approach to stalking, or what we call the first pass, which would be considered a circle around something, that's just to become familiar with it. And the next thing that usually happens in the tradition of stalking, and this is not very expected by a lot of people, is to actually be playful and curious and maybe even be teasing and a bit mocking. So, excuse me, if I was to say be an adolescent and I was to sit there and try and meditate, my instinct as an adolescent is to actually make fun of the person who's meditating. So I'd sit there and be all seriously stoic and think of lofty spiritual things, or try and pretend I'm actually trying to shut up or all of that, because that's actually the next instinctual boundary to becoming close to something. So we have that first pass, which is, what the heck is that person doing sitting in a chair or on a cushion or in front of an altar? And then that second pass would be making fun of someone sitting in a chair, you know, next to an altar trying to meditate. Not in necessarily a hurtful way, but just generally in the, I'm not used to this and I don't want to commit to it or believe it's going to do anything until I'm sure. And that's inevitably how adolescents kind of roll, right? So the third pass of stalking, and again, in this sense, we're talking about meditation. The third pass is to actually really deeply invest in the experience. So maybe you've had enough time watching what people are getting from meditation or yoga or qigong or, you know, fitness or something. And then we spend some time kind of like goofing around, pretending that, you know, we might be into it. And then we actually go in and invest the time in the actual complete personal vulnerability and willingness and maybe effort and things like that, so that we can actually discover for ourselves what we're going to get from that. Now, this is more fun in a room full of people because the timing is easier to estimate, but I'm actually really curious what people think the fourth pass of stalking would be. So I'm going to give you guys some time to type in what you think the fourth pass of stalking would be. Again, one is the child, one is the adolescent, one is kind of like the full human experience. And there's no wrong answer, but I'm just curious, and it gives you room in your mind for what that answer might mean. So I'm going to wait and see what people type in. And I'm going to go on to a practice that might reinforce something. And it's meant to be fun, because let's just say you have insomnia and you're looking for something to do with yourself while you're lying there tossing and turning. I'm pretty familiar with that. So let's say that you want to investigate your six minds. And you're going to approach them the way you would approach anything in the tradition of stalking, because we've kind of been doing that for almost 2 months now. Well, I guess not quite 2 months, 6 weeks. So if you bring your attention to your sacrum and you think of yourself as a child, just wondering what that's for, what do people do with it, what's the big deal? The second pass might be pretending you understand what your sacrum would be, how it, you know, may or may not affect you as an athlete or as a sexual being or other things, because again, now you're kind of the teenager version. And then if you dropped into what a sacrum is in its true aliveness and its adultness and its capacity, then now you've actually given yourself permission to kind of be curious, kind of be playful, and then kind of be invested. So we could do the same thing with our spine. So the childlike version of a spine is, you know, what's this? And then the adolescent version of the spine is, well, probably like, screw you. but at the same time, it's kind of like, maybe I should be more serious. Maybe I can play with it. So again, there's that theme. And at some point we get to that third pass, that third sense of what we're doing. And our spine becomes that adult, complete self, full aliveness, completely present as you, with whatever that turns out to be right now. And then you can go into your gut. Now, guts in kids, that's a scary thing. The first things kids feel every time they're stressed out is it's in their tummy, because most things that are stressing out kids are the other people around them, obviously. So we can approach our gut in that stalking medicine wheel tradition by just going, I'm going to rub my tummy. I'm going to see what tummies are. I have no idea. And then you come at it as an adolescent, you know, and you can play with, I have to have a tight tummy. I have to have a something tummy. And as the adult with our sense of belongingness and what shame may or may not be doing with us and all that social stuff, then we find ourselves just inevitably kind of owning what it is that that radar, that deep feeling, that deep intuition is. And usually, unless we're an asshole, we're naturally going to start noticing how that actually impacts everyone else, especially younger people, because now we've grown up in ourself in that way and respect ourself and know ourself in that way. And again, unless you're a complete twit, you are going to notice everyone else in that way. So heart, children don't have any problem there. Adolescents, it's really about too big or too small. Adults, I think it's just about whether or not we actually believe we know what it's supposed to be, because that's your head. So as we move into the space of heart, there's really not much to say because it's not really a place for words. Although there is a definite change in patience and compassion and kindness in an adult heart. And as you'll see when we go through the fourth pass, things will be perhaps even more interesting. A child's face is all about, is this okay? Am I doing something right? I mean, half of the time kids play, they just want someone to see what they're doing. You know, it's the most embarrassing moment as a parent. Your kid draws a picture and you say, oh, that's a really great dinosaur. And he says, that's a transformer, Dad. And you're like, oh, I thought it turned into a dinosaur. So a child face is an amazing thing. And when you lose your child's face, wow, almost started crying there just thinking about what that would be to just shut off your child's face. And we all have, because we live in the Western world, an adolescent face. I mean, that's, just think about going to New York and all the boundaries and all the games and the, I don't know, the facial gang signs that we use to try and manipulate and interact with each other in that way. It's beautiful and it's kind of hilarious. Then we come into the adult face, and of course that's you. And it carries everything that you carry with you. And it gets very heavy if you give up on those other faces. And then we come to our pupils. And the pupils are the same for everywhere, for everyone, because your pupils are just pure perceptive, momentary attention and intention, that little moment in between. Although I would say that we anticipate them to be different as children and adolescents and adults. And in a way, I think they may be, but I would ask anyone to play with the truth of that and decide for yourself. Okay, so the fourth path of stalking. So we're stalking meditation. So as a child, we would walk around the meditator going, what the heck is Papa doing sitting in the chair? And that second pass, we would probably sit in a chair when no one is looking because we're an adolescent and, you know, you don't want to get caught trying anything. And then we're kind of fidgety, but we're also curious and we're also teasing. And that's actually the traditional second step to learning anything. That third step, as stalking meditation, is to actually be wholeheartedly invested in the experience. No idea what it's going to be, and that's always the truth. So the fourth pass, which had a drum roll, the fourth pass in the traditional teaching on stalking is what you bring back to your people. So, what would be the gift of meditation that comes back to your people? Well, given my sense of humor, I would just say you're less of a shithead. In the sense of, you know, we all can get really, really twisted up And we can't really find a place to unravel all that stuff without a way to participate with it and really engage with it. And meditation, it's like the lubrication of the universe. It's just a big chance to unravel that stuff. So if you actually go through those first three passes of meditation and experience them foundationally and fundamentally, and you spend enough time, especially in the third pass, what you bring back to your people is a person who is more patient, more conscious, more forgiving, more compassionate, perhaps wiser in some way. So that's that teaching on stalking. And obviously we can keep going into other opportunities, but since this is about meditation, that's the idea, is to just recognize that there is a way of approaching anything new, and if you follow that natural stalking practice, then you will get there. And that could be as true, if not even more potently true, about stalking your inner woundedness, a certain kind of trauma that the memory still is in your being, in your body, and the memory is changing how you can be within yourself as a being and within your body. And that's actually the trauma. It isn't about what happened to you as much as it is about how you're no longer actually really you. And if you can resolve that separation from you, then you can resolve the trauma. So I wanted to share that as a way of, I don't know, it just seems like a nice Sunday night thing to talk about. So there's another teaching I wanted to bring up, and it has to do with autonomy and non-interference. And it doesn't take very much time to talk about, because it's really more about how you choose to unravel that reality, I guess. So the teaching on non-interference, again, goes through the compass. And in this way, we start in the north, and it starts with the belief or the understanding or the truth that everything that we bring into being as beings is innate to being. Said another way, no matter what the hell's going on, if you're doing something or somebody else is doing something, it's allowed in the universe. So the resistance, the complaining, and the judging are not in any way moving anything ahead. And this is actually a teaching that's taught to people who are being raised up as mentors. So if you're being raised to actually help people out, the first thing that you're taught is, no matter what they're doing, you can't have a reaction to it or a judgment about it or an automatic boundary, because now you separated yourself and you separated them from the community or the family or the tribe or whatever. And that's just going to make their woundedness and the woundedness of the people worse. So it doesn't mean that we are going to celebrate someone doing something that's not helping everyone. We're just not going to go around making up magic rules about right and wrong. So if everything is innate, and imagine that you're talking to a friend who's going through a really hard time, and they're finally admitting that they have a challenge in their life. You know, say a close friend has an addiction issue and they're finally sitting down crying, saying, I'm this horrible bad person because I have this habit and this addiction. So if we go, well, you're garbage, go away. Well, I don't think that's helping anyone. But so once we've gone to that first step of what's innate and accepted it and embraced it and found a willingness to have compassion for that person, the next thing along this teaching is to go into the East, where we would actually go, and again, in a traditional community, you would know people very, very well. So when this person comes to you with this problem, the second thing that you do is you find the sense of encouragement. Now, it's hard to be encouraging to someone that you don't know, because it sounds like you're just blowing smoke up their bum. You're awesome. It's all great. If you actually know someone, then you can say, I remember the time when, you know, you rescued that dog from that, you know, lake that was covered in ice, and everyone was really, you know, surprised and proud that you went and risked your life to save that dog, you know, or something. Because when we're trying to get help, we want to first be accepted, and two, we are hoping we can find someone to remind us of who we really are and maybe how we can orient ourselves to the world to make things better. If you don't know someone very well, then you're going to have to get to know them well enough to pick out some of their past and say, you're still the person who's succeeded at this and surpassed this and has managed to maintain all the things you have, you know, given the challenges you face. Because we want to have a sense of our courage. If we don't have any sense of our courage and we're trying to admit that we have a problem, we're not really going into the problem from a place of resolve. We're going into the problem, you know, really probably just hoping to just have it be okay. And if that's where you're at, that's a good start. So everything that comes into being is innate. The only way to actually try and move into something with people is to find a way for them to move into it with courage. So we have to find what it is that they remember about themselves that has to do with courage. The third thing has to do with needs and meaning, which is something I keep coming back to when we're going into the embodiment, because that's what drives most of our instincts is needs and meaning. So let's say you're in a community of people and one of the people in your community has this issue and they're admitting to this issue and they're trying to find a way to resolve it. If they have the courage to go deep, then they won't be going just deep into the problem. They'll be going deep into the self. And that depth into the self is where they find those needs and meaning. And if you share meaning with people, it's almost like taking a sense of shared courage and shared resolve and shared intention and capacity and willpower and generosity and again a meaning and energy, or I guess I would say energy, so that you can move into the actual resolution part of the problem with a sense of meaning to meet your needs. I don't know of anything else that does that with people. Number four, and I'm almost done. Number four is actually a process we call questioning intention or assessing intent. So I remember when I was about 12 years into an initiation around medicine wheel teachings and sweat lodges and pipes and other dancing and stuff like that. The elders that I was being raised up by had sat me down at one point, again about 12 years in, and did this process of questioning my intention around certain things I'd done over the last decade around certain ceremonies. And it wasn't like they were attacking me. They're, you know, like, what were you doing? They're like, we remember this time and there was this thing and then this happened and then you chose to say this and then this other thing happened. And I was sitting there going, yeah, I remember that day. And they actually asked me, well, what was your intention, Michael, in the moment that you spoke those words? And this is with people who I care about deeply, who care about me deeply. And I was basically busted in the best possible way to be able to sit there and go, oh, yeah, my motivation, my intention when I said that was to essentially try and control what other people do or think or, you know, feel, especially about me. You know, and that's something we all do a lot. So that's actually a process that you can do with yourself, especially when you're dealing with deep embodied states of distress, the whole somatic mindfulness experience. It's especially valuable when you're facing the experience of addiction, because you can keep questioning where volition and ideas and choices come from. But you have to go through all four to be able to do that in a way that doesn't feel like you've done something wrong or you're going to get punished or you should focus on all the damage. Instead of maybe understanding how to change your intent, so next time this starts getting going in your life, you can use your self-acceptance, your sense of courage, your sense of meaning in response to the needs you feel, with a deeper sense of embracing your actual adult self with intention. So that's these two teachings that I think really hopefully bring us home to ourselves, which is what they're about. And fundamentally give us a tool for contemplation and communication, especially with people who we hold in our lives as mentors or elders or you know, healers in some way, because that's the best possible way to go with this. And both of these wheels are in a way the same wheel, because if you go through that whole process of the non-interference wheel or the wheel of finding your autonomy, you will inevitably come back to your community as a person who actually is living with right relationship, because they found a way to manifest their intent for the service of people as much as themselves, if not more. And that's what sets us free. And it's literally, it's that easy. That simple, anyway. Easy is the wrong word. It's that uncomplicated. Okay. So still open to questions and ideas, almost done. So this is our last week. We have 7 days to go. And getting a lot of questions about now what and why do we have to stop, and which is awesome. I'm glad you guys are really getting lots out of this. So what's next? Next thing I'm going to be doing is a 12-week somatic mindfulness Qigong class. So we're going to be learning Qigong, specifically a kind of Qigong called Dao Yin, which is really old and has a lot to do with embodied awareness. We're going to do some of the standing things, some seated practice, and then some practices on the floor that are kind of a bit like yoga in the sense of deep stretching, but they're done in a somatic orientation more than just a like a nibble on my toes, although both are cool. So that's the next thing that's going to happen. I think that's going to start in 3 or 4 weeks. I'll have to just check the calendar. Next thing that's up after that is a somatic mindfulness weekend for people who actually want to study the somatic mindfulness process. That's something that people who are patients or caregivers could get into, that because it's very transformative if you're up to the work. And that course is also for clinicians and people who would be wanting to up their game a bit with working with emotional intelligence and somatic mindfulness in their practice. Also great for people looking for community or continuing education credits for whatever license that you have, if you can choose your own training that way. The cleanse starts on Wednesday the 20th, so if you're thinking about a rite of passage that would keep you committed and oriented to your health and being consistent and obviously eat real good food and learn about every system in your body and maybe take some supplements to balance things out, that's a 10-week course, and again, it starts this Wednesday. So if you're looking for something like that, let me know, because I think there's 5 or 6 places still open. What else? Oh yeah, so almost done. So the next thing that'll be happening with this 49 days is I'm doing it again in the fall, and I'm going to be offering it more as a course that's going to come with pre-made audio recordings for each of the meditations, so it can be done as an actual guided meditation at any time you want. The teaching part will be done as, again, separate videos so that you can watch them kind of at the time you want. And then I'll be doing the live thing in the mornings or the evenings, depending on when people want to do it. But that way people will have a chance to look at the material specifically in the order that they want to and review it with the support of those recorded guided meditations. And there's also going to be an ebook that people will have. So I'm going to create a Kickstarter campaign by the end of this week, because that's when we're pretty much done. And I'm hoping to get some people to sign up who actually want to do it again in the fall, who want to have access to the ebook and the guided meditation recordings and all the other content, and try this again now that we kind of have a better idea of what all this stuff's really about. Please let me know if that makes any sense to you, or if you're excited about that at all. Because obviously if no one wants to do that, I really don't want to spend the 300 hours it's going to take to put that together. So I have no idea how long it's going to take, but there are people who said they really want to do this again and really want to have a better sense of resources to be able to access really easy. So that's what I'm going to be doing for the next couple of months. So hopefully you're still playing around with your deep breathing with respect to the egg, always finding new little corners in your egg, if eggs are allowed to have corners, really getting into a feel for the yolk and really getting into a feel of allowing it to move into your spine. And again, without direction or force. Tomorrow morning, we're going to do a review of the tortoise breathing with all of the muscles and the fiddly bits. And then we're going to learn about the three shamanic minds or spiritual minds as an overview, and then focus on the first one. Then Tuesday, we're going to focus on the second one, then Wednesday, the third one. Thursday, I'm going to try something I've never done before, which I think will be pretty comedic anyway. Then Friday, we'll do some really interesting Qigong that has to do with connecting with the sky and the soil. And then Saturday and Sunday will be a surprise, and that'll be the end of it. Oh my God. So 1 week to go, folks. I hope you're still available to wake up early in the morning to get into all this stuff, because that's what's going to happen for the next 7 days. Feel free to write questions, send me anything you need, just to make sure you're going to get the most out of this. And then I'll see you tomorrow morning, bright and early. Yeah, don't see any questions popping up, so I'll give that another minute. Okay. Cool. Thanks, Bonnie. All right, so I'll see you guys in the morning if you're coming out. And have a lovely Sunday evening. I'm going to go get my fire going again. All right. See you in the morning.